Christine from Nashville, Tennessee. This is Keep Asking, the weekly podcast that helps you dive in a bit deeper and wider into the research providing insights into today's church and culture. I'm here today with my colleagues Scott McConnell and Casey Oliver to talk about everything that is wonderful about research. We're going to talk about Bible reading, but we're going to get there through talking about the magic of qualitative research. Welcome back, guys.
Glad to be back.
So here's my question that you can think about. In what we're talking about Bible readers, we did some focus groups to get this fun information. And I want to know if you could learn something from a focus group. What's the topic of personal interest?
When you say focus groups, can you explain that like I'm a five-year-old?
Touche.
That's really that. You've been waiting for that. I wish we posted this on video because you need to see the smugness on Casey's face. Let me tell you about focus groups. Focus groups are an opportunity to have, what I like to say is focus groups are a really good directed conversation. But it's typically you've gathered a group of people, whether they're your customers or a group that if a client is interested in reaching or understanding better. And so you get them in a room. There's other ways you can do them online, you can do video, you can do them in a board, but let's just, the traditional ways you picture them in a room, and then you go through a series of questions to explore their thoughts, their sentiment toward a brand, or their behaviors, actions, and it's basically a way to help a client listen, and they can't address any opinions. The client has to be either behind the glass or watching the video, and they just are learning. They're putting themselves in a position to learn from this group. So what group would you want to learn from, and what topic, Casey?
I guess, what group would I want to learn from?
You're the client. If you have a massive budget, I mean, I would think for you, maybe you'd want to do, what NBA general managers or how do they make those kind of decisions, which would be a pretty expensive project.
I don't know if I have much to learn from
okay.
The latest. As we're recording this, we're in the aftermath of rumors floating about Kristaps Porzingis being traded that were heartbreaking to me. So for context there.
Yes.
I don't know. This is a hard question. I don't know. I have tough to put myself in that position of, okay, what do I?
You're a curious person to think, who could you learn from? And it can be any group. It could be a particular type of voter. It could be a particular segment of the church-going population. Maybe you work with college students. Would you ever be interested in a focus group of maybe entering freshmen?
Yeah,
but you can't just steal that. You have to add your own flair to it.
Oh, yeah. I think that'd be good. And specifically, I guess, when I think about discipleship and kind of next steps for college students and owning their own faith, I think that's one that that would be real interesting to hear, when you go back to your college campuses, because, I'm doing a Sunday school class and people give very spiritual answers in it because they grew up in church. And I think also that because a lot of them are mature Christians, but kind of to know, hey, when you're going back on your campus in an environment where they're not talking to me,
mm-hmm.
how are those things playing out, or what are some challenges to that playing out? Definitely that would be interesting.
All right. So, and I get the impression you don't sit around and daydream about different possible focus groups. That kind of makes me sad.
Sorry.
All right, Scott.
I don't think I was thinking quite as spiritual with my answer to that question.
I had to spoon feed that to him, so don't feel bad.
So I was thinking about food, since that's one of my favorite topics. And I think getting at kind of the decision-making process on why so many people eat food that I don't think tastes good. That they go, you know, their choice in either restaurants or just even within the grocery store, they're just a lot of really bland, no flavor kind of foods when there's a good option just a couple spots down on the shelf. And I don't quite get that.
All right. That's interesting. Mine would be a pretty big project because I'd want to do groups with two segments. I would want to, the general focus would be afternoon drive time sports talk radio listeners. And those who in the Nashville, I'd focus on the Nashville market. And then I would want to listen to those who were listening to 102.5 before Jared and the GM went on the air, but no longer listen. And then I would probably do the bulk of the groups to the raving fans of the 102.5 Jared and the GM show. I'm very interested.
Which you are one of course.
You know, I've weaned myself off. I've kind of given myself some space, but I would love to learn from that group. What is it that they are getting from that, and what they choose? You know, they're calling in. I think that would be a segment that would be fascinating to learn from. All right, so we have a sponsor for this week's episode, the Christian Standard Bible, and we're giving away 5 copies of their study Bible, and it's a The Christian Standard Bible captures the Bible's original meaning without compromising clarity. It's an optimal blend of accuracy and readability. This translation helps readers make a deeper connection with God's Word and inspires lifelong discipleship. The Bible is meant to be read, understood, and shared. So I think that's a great sponsor for what we're talking about today. So qualitative research, I'm going to need you guys to kind of jump in because I can't interview myself, but I have some big topics. But Scott, what is it you all aren't as drawn to qualitative, you know, the listening, the discovering, the descriptive? What are the qualities of what we're wanting to study versus quantitative, where we're trying to count, get measures, you know, we're trying to get that. What's the value when we're approaching a project and we're doing qualitative versus the survey, the quantitative?
It's really kind of a 1-2 punch. It, you know, the ideal project includes both because, you know, oftentimes we want to finish with some how many. We want to know how many people think something, how many people are doing something, how many people would never do something. And so we want to finish with some numbers so that we know if we should try to serve them, if we should try to have resources for them, and make some decisions based on whether there's enough people going in that direction. But the best place to get those options from is to learn from people through qualitative to see what are the full variety of things that are that people are doing or that people are influenced by or that people are motivated by. And to really get inside their heads a little bit, and that to me is the value of qualitative, and today I think we're going to kind of jump in and talk about specifically focus groups,
mm-hmm.
And Lizette, within the qualitative space, what is it about focus groups that makes it good at identifying motivators?
Well, I think focus groups provide a great opportunity to get people, when I say a good conversation, as a group relaxes and as they start talking about a topic and they're responding to one another, they're not as guarded as maybe they would be in a one-on-one interview. And there are times when, you know, the more sensitive topics, controversial topics, or you know, there's various reasons when one-on-one is much more appropriate, but when people are interacting with one another, they're not as guarded with their answers, or they're not trying to be so logical. So it's a bit of a chance to eavesdrop and get what they would be saying to, you know, how would they talk to their friends about it? So you are manufacturing an environment. So part of the goal is creating as comfortable an environment. And that's also a part of who you recruit to get into the group. You know, do they have enough in common that they're going to have those shared interests? And then setting the tone and the giving them permission to interact with one another. And so for me, some of my favorite moments in a focus group is when someone says something that just on its own would not have stood out to me, but you feel the whole room either, you know, they're in total agreement, or it's something they all hate, and they're, you know, so they all come out of their shells and they're like, oh yeah, that's terrible. And so when you feel that across the board, you've really hit a nerve. And so that's, for me, that's just an easy clue. Let's dig in here. Let's get more descriptions. So that's real fun. A caveat I would say, Scott knows I'm very protective about this when we're talking to clients. Focus groups are great at finding problems. It's a wonderful way to, if you are willing to learn from your customers or from your members or from the folks you're serving, it's a great way to learn maybe where there's disconnects, where there's confusion, where people are missing the marks of what maybe you're trying to communicate. You can get ideas from focus groups, but I'm always very cautious that you want to take a different strategy if you're brainstorming. I think Steve Jobs. What's your Steve Jobs quote about? It's not the customer's job to.
I had no idea Steve Jobs had anything to do with that.
Oh, I thought you'd quoted it. So now we're just making that up. Okay, so I thought you were the one who said. Who is it that said it's not the customer's job to come up with the ideas for our products?
Probably our bosses.
Oh, okay. Okay, excellent. So, I'm always very cautious to say don't take, you know, because people can have ideas because you're encouraging them to dream or, you know, what would the ideal be? But you want to be very cautious in running with that. What's more important is learning kind of what they value. And what's behind that?
Well, let's jump into some of that fun stuff. Let's specifically talk about some of the focus groups you've done among Bible readers and, you know, some of the things that kind of surprised you, stood out to you, some of the responses maybe that caused you to light up like you were just talking about.
Yeah, that's probably the Bible Reader Project. And, I do love doing focus groups. The Bible Reader Project was very... impactful because, again, you're listening. You're not doing any teaching and you're not telling people what they should do. You're learning about what they go about doing. And so to hear people in four different cities, I think we did 14 groups total, to over and over again hear men and women describe, you know, how they read the Bible, their challenges, their opportunities, it made me much more sympathetic to how to connect with them. And in things that we do, you know, in even in our research or the stuff we've done on discipleship, made me more sensitive to maybe the emotional connection that people want and need when you're communicating the value of the Bible. Because that's some of the stuff we've seen. And we know from our quantitative discipleship research, Bible reading has a huge impact on every area of someone's discipleship. So what can we be doing? So my hope, even as we do this podcast, is that if you're a parent and you want to help your kids, read the Bible a little bit more, if you are a Sunday school teacher, small group leader, and you want to help someone, or you yourself, there's some basic guidelines that I think can help. One thing I think people are very aware, and these were regular Bible readers. These were people that indicated they read 3 to 4 times a week from their Bible. And they were also regular readers of other material. So that was how we kind of qualified it. But some of the things, you know, it's good to remember this. They describe what Bible reading improved the quality of their life. It helped them. The more they read the Bible, they told us they trust God more. They believe more that God will take care of everything. The more they read the Bible, they can endure difficulty. So, you know, it confirms some things that we had seen in our quantitative, you know, but we got some richer descriptions of some things that we'd already learned.
I guess I was curious as you were describing that and finding these people who fit that particular description is how do we get to that place? How do we find and recruit these people? And you had mentioned even having some things in common, but how do you still make sure that you're kind of getting a broad range of perspectives within that group that you're interested in?
Yeah, and that's something, you know, you have, we had qualifiers. Now it's in the list when they were doing the recruit, you have a screener that basically folks go through, and so there's a few layers that they have to move through. So part of it is, you know, they had to indicate regular Bible reading. Did we have a church attendance? I think we had maybe a minimal church attendance.
I don't recall.
I'd have to go back. So please don't make that so difficult. Right. But then we, in the makeup of groups, we will put maximum and minimums on ages, or maximum and minimums on certain ethnicities, that kind of thing. So we want those common things, but also we want to make sure that we're not just focusing on, are we just hearing from 65-year-olds, or are we also getting the perspective of 25-year-olds, you know, in there? So that's how you just have some basic things where you recruit, but you make sure there's a bit of a mix in there. So go ahead.
We saw from some of the quantitative research this year that just about half of evangelicals read a little bit of the Bible each day, which means that the other half have kind of a different method for approaching the Bible. Did you talk about the habits that people have when it comes to Bible reading?
Yeah, it's that was pretty fascinating because it really, there was a big range. So people can be regular Bible readers, but they can have their very narrow and comfortable things that they're drawn to. Stepping back, we did men and women, and then we also did moms of elementary and moms of teens. And so the roadblocks across the board were similar. So we had what we heard from everybody, a roadblock could be just that it's when they find that it's boring or irrelevant. For kids specifically, that it's scary. You know, when they get there, then they just want to stop. People get confused and frustrated, so that can halt their habit, and then they just go back to their safe zone where they know, oh, I know what's in this. You know, it's if it's Proverbs, if it's, you know, a gospel, you know, that kind of thing. Too long and too much work. So,
is that to read at all or to read a certain part of
the big thing that stood out for me is a lot of times people just want permission to know where they can stop, you know, because it's a big book. There was a big difference. We had a whole big list of these are people who can read novels. They read all the time. But again and again, picking up the Bible is much more daunting. So I would say a huge thing is if you're just helping some folks in your church or someone you know or your kids, give them permission, give them start and stop places, help them know kind of it's okay, you're not supposed to finish the whole thing today, or, you know, it's not this race. And so knowing where to stop or where to start and kind of jump in, because it's just the big idea was it's overwhelming. And if we think about it, there's a lot of text in the Bible. There's just a ton in there. And that became really clear to me. We're talking to over and over again, regular Bible readers, they still are overwhelmed. And so if you think about that whole big group that we never got to that don't read the Bible, they're so overwhelmed, they can't even go to their comfortable spots. So that was kind of a big thing. I think the single... I think the biggest way you can help either yourself or someone else just start to create a habit is help them find like five entry points, like five core places, whether it be show them, hey, here's jump in the Gospels and help them know this is where they are. You know, just talk through this is what's going on here, and you can always jump in here and you're going to get this information. Maybe the wisdom literature, and then help them get a bookmark or say, you know, stretch yourself. Maybe Paul's epistles. I'm not trying to tell you what, because I think as people go, you know, you may be helping them see here, put a bookmark at the beginning of the Minor Prophets, but then when you give them that starting spot, give them permission to stop, and which really, let's face it, the Minor Prophets are great for that because they're not that long. So, but then give them some tools to know what they're doing while they're in there, because it can be confusing.
When you talk about helping, some things I remember as I was watching these focus groups, not in the room, but via video, was how many people, when they talked about their own Bible reading, mentioned somebody else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you mention we can be helping others, that's a real thing. I mean,
You
know, Bible reading isn't just, oh, this is something I need to do, and it's all up to me to pull myself up by my bootstraps and,
right.
and get this done. You know, their motivation is to help others. Their motivation is, somebody asked them a question, or somebody, you know, a teacher was teaching on something and they want to go back and look at that passage. There's just a lot of interactions with other people that makes it a little more of a community looking at scripture than we might think when we just hear how often do you read?
Right. And I think pastors could be very encouraged at how many people, if a pastor says, and they make it pretty simple, and they say, go read this, and then they give them a reason to go read it. Now, not everyone's going to do it, but I think they can have a lot of confidence. Maybe that'd be a great quantitative if your pastor said. They put weight on that, and then if you give them a few hooks to understand what it is they're going to read, and they can have some context there, they can go do that. Back to the relational, I was amazed. I think in our world here at Lifeway, it seems that when we think of, hey, when did you have, we can have a little quiz for our listeners. I want you, the listeners, to think of a recent time you had a significant experience reading the Bible. It doesn't have to be dramatic, but just a very meaningful, significant time reading the Bible. So think of, you know, where you were, what was going on, all that. Now, if you pictured yourself alone in a chair at a desk, you know, somewhere on the side of a mountain, but you were alone reading your Bible, maybe pen in hand, you would be the minority from what we heard in the focus groups, because the majority of people, when asked that same question, mentioned that significant moment was being shared. It was someone told them to read it, you know, either in a conversation or they read it and they shared. So the other person was a part of that significant experience. And I think that's huge for discipleship.
Not that we use focus groups to quantify things, but
right.
You know, in that group discussion, it was very striking.
Oh yeah. I just met a lot.
Yes.
It was enough to pay attention to. I didn't mean, so I know when I said majority that, see, look, I got in trouble because I stepped over. One thing we learned, especially about kids, here's some clues. It's really important to help your kids get age-appropriate Bibles and something they're comfortable with and has good textual clues into how to find their way around. So think about, you know, if your kid is in fourth grade and ask them to show you, you know, their favorite textbook. You know, if it's one that's easy to get around, there's clues to how to move around that book. So go to your local Lifeway store and make that kind of a moment to pick that out. And don't fret if you're like, well, we just got him a Bible 2 years ago. There's things that are changing, and it's really important that they connect, because if moms described it, if their kids can't relate and they don't understand, they're quick to shut down, quit, give up, and even grow resentful towards Bible reading, but when they are relating, and that was key, and when they're understanding it, moms described that their kids are saying they understand it, it's awesome, they want to learn more, they continue to learn on their own, and they can apply it. And so they're learning those skills that they're going to need for a long time.
And that's something we see churches help with by giving kids their first Bible or giving graduating seniors a Bible. But there's a lot of things in between a couple of those milestones where, you know, a child might need an easy reading Bible in there. They might need a Bible that's packaged, that's cool enough that they can actually carry it to student ministry or youth group and not feel out of place. And just making sure you're thinking through some of those things as a parent is definitely worth doing.
Yeah, and yeah, take some time, walk through, help have them be a part of the process, and I think that can be really good. Another thing, once people are in, as I mentioned, they have their favorite spots, and this may sound a little crass, and I don't mean it to be crass, but it's in some ways they're Bible reading habits sounded more like handling a rabbit's foot. Scott's smiling like that was too far, right? but because of those safe spots. So I'm not saying the Bible is equivalent to that, but it's they were comforted by it, but they didn't have a high level of confidence in moving around. They just would go to the same passages and the same passages would bring them comfort, you know, no matter what. And so I think a huge way to help someone is if in their reading you can give them other spots to go to that are very similar. Like, hey, here are three places that are going to talk about either the same topic or three big chunks to see a story progress along so they don't have to work through two whole books. Like, hey, learn these three stories and help them get some building blocks there. And because I think part of it is just the comfort of learning to open up and know how to move around, I think would be really big. Casey, what burning questions do you have since you're so curious about focus groups?
I mean, I guess as someone helping to frame that discussion as they're going, and maybe there are places where, you know, people aren't in that comfort zone of being able to talk about exactly. How do you guide a conversation without leading it to places you already want? How do you keep it objective, I guess?
Oh, okay. Well, you try to keep it as general as possible. Let me concede this. The more removed I am from the topic or the product or the client, the easier it is. I've had to do focus groups on an assessment tool I helped create, and that is very hard because when people are saying the wrong thing or you're listening and they have this opinion, you know, there's a screaming voice in my head saying, that's wrong, that's wrong. So in those groups, I did some focus groups in Australia on our church planner assessment. And I would have to say, if they had questions, because the folks knew, I said, I'll give you my last 30 minutes as that kind of researcher, but let's spend this first hour and a half, you know, here. Because you're asking open ends, you're asking them to describe. And then as you need to get to a specific place and topic, you introduce that, you know, very specific idea. But realize once you introduce, you know, a concept, an idea, a product, a brand, you know, whatever, you've influenced the rest of the group. So you want to give them as much room as possible, but also get to your point of what you're wanting to accomplish.
We're about out of time. Is there one more thing that you would want to make sure we don't walk away from as we think about Bible readers and what motivates us to want to read or not, or what are some of the barriers?
I think just helping people jump in. And I know we don't have just pastors who listen, but that really jumped out is the significance of pastors and giving, just weaving that in when you're speaking or as you go, the selection of a Bible, how people engage with it, how they value it. Very high value of the Bible. And I think, you know, you can be preaching on anything and be building up the value and worth of having the Bible, using the Bible. Also helping folks, there's such folks are using things digitally, doing things through apps. So giving some guidelines, I think, on where to go with that, how to use those, so it's not just Google and a free-for-all. So I think if I could encourage anyone, and of course application, but if I can encourage pastors and parents, you have such a huge influence, and just really shaping that ongoing engagement.
We're definitely grateful to B&H and their investment in that research as it helps them to shape Bible products, not the text itself, of course, but the formatting of the Bibles that they print and publish.
With all that being said, remember, our sponsor this week is the Christian Standard Bible, and you can get, the first five people can get that tweet to us at Lifeway Research and at CS Bible can get a CSB study Bible. And it's optimal blend of accuracy and readability. This translation helps readers make a deeper connection with God's Word and inspires lifelong discipleship. And as always, thanks for listening. If you have any questions, please tweet to us at S. McCon, at StatsGuyCasey, and at Lizette Beer, or at Lifeway Research. Write your reviews on iTunes. And join us next time for another edition of Keep Asking. Keep asking, learn more, do better.